Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. This is Dr. John Braccio of Regional Psychological Services, Dr. John B., with the younger Dr. John Braccio. We're going to now talk about grieving. Certainly a huge topic. And I want to do something else here, too, as part of this. Yesterday was the anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And those of us that remember that day, which I do, I happen to be home. I happen to be watching TV, of all things, an early couch potato, I guess, but happened to see that when I first heard the bulletin. It's one of those things you don't really forget. And historically, another one has to be when Abraham Lincoln died. And all of us find different ways to deal with grief. And one of the poems that I've always thought was a classic, in my day you had to memorize it at Grand Rapids Catholic Central back in the days when the nun said, you're going to memorize these things. Well, this was one of them. It was by Walt Whitman. He wrote it in 1865, and it was part of his grief of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And it's "O Captain, My Captain." I'm just going to read just a little bit, not to bore you, but to try to give you an idea and the metaphors, the examples. It's really a wonderful, wonderful poem that you can go to "O Captain, My Captain" on the internet or a book of poetry or wherever. But let me just read this. "O Captain, My Captain, our fearful trip is done." Of course, the captain is Abraham Lincoln. "The ship has weathered every rack." That, of course, is the country. "The prize we sought is won," which is saving of the Union, ending of slavery. "The port is near. The bells I hear, the people all exulting," he's coming in, "while follow eyes the steady keel, the vessel grim and daring. But, oh, heart, 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 oh, the bleeding drops of red, where on the deck my captain lies, fallen, cold, and dead." Now, that's part of this. Not to bore you, but I do feel from a historical point of view, it is important that we really be aware of some, really, I consider them historical documents that I don't know if people read, but Walt Whitman's "O Captain, My Captain," that is one of the classics. And if you read it and you get into the spirit of the death of the great captain, Abraham Lincoln, it certainly is something that can move you if you are so desired. If you desire. Okay. Let's talk here about stages of grief. There's some controversy about if people go through these stages. I think clearly people don't go through all of them, or that they can go through them in different sequence. But I certainly have seen these appear over and over in private work. And I'm sure, John,
you've done the same thing.
Do you want to talk a little bit about this, about grief and the impact? It's kind of a lot of what we're talking about besides our Superman here today, of course.
No, definitely. Now, you just mentioned the five stages, and I think you're referring to the Kubler-Ross model, where she talks about the five stages being, and again, you mentioned that not everyone goes through them, and they're not really a rigid set that, okay, you're going through grieving process, you should go through these. People kind of go in and out of the stages. They kind of, maybe they do one more than the other, but anyways, with that being said, the first one is the denial, you know, this can't be happening to me type of a deal. And, you know, we were talking about the situation with my grandparents. Three of the four died in a week. And I remember at that time, it just, this cannot be happening. And even with Coonrod, it was one of those things. It was just such a shocker that, and again, Coonrod, if you weren't listening earlier, just when I was 19 years old, he was killed in a car accident, and he was one of my buddies. So it was...
And a wonderful kid from a wonderful family.
Yes, definitely. So... that's considered the first stage. And then the second one is anger. Why is this happening? Who is to blame? Is the, you want to blame someone, find someone, kind of a scapegoat, a situation or a person and whatnot. Then you have the bargaining. And by bargaining, it might be a situation where you say things to yourself like, well, you know, if I can make it to my son's graduation, then I will donate all of my money into charity or what. That would be an example of the bargaining stage. Then you also have the depression where when that sets in, you're too sad to do anything. You don't want to get up. You don't want to, you know, just a lot of the typical symptoms that you see with depression. And then last and final is that you just come to peace and you come to terms to the situation, and kind of a thing. I think an important thing to understand too with the grief is not to look at it. I mean, I made it sound like a series of stages, and I think it's more. It's kind of really more of a roller coaster where you kind of have ups and you have downs, and that's how you can kind of distinguish it too from a depression. Where with the depression, it's just kind of it's 24/7. You're down in the dumps. Where with the grief, you kind of have moments where you know you can laugh. You can. Be happy, but then, you know, then you get the, then, you know, some, maybe a song on the radio comes on, makes you think of that person, and then the old feelings come back, the old intense, and then you kind of go, you know, you're going back down on that roller coaster.
Let me give you another question here, John Marie of Lansing. It kind of fits into this. I'm still very depressed about my husband's death of 5 years ago. I can't get over it. I'm upset every day. Why can't I get over my grieving and move on? Now, how does that fit in terms
of
what
we're talking
about?
Well, that sounds, you know, I mean, it kind of sounds like there is, it is obviously, it's very normal to be very upset be in a lot of grief. But then you do get into what's called complicated grief. And with complicated grief is where it's really becoming more of almost a clinical depression where you can't do anything, which isn't, I mean, obviously you're going to be out, you can be out of commission for a little bit, but when you get into the point where, you know, it's a year later and you're still completely out of commission, that you aren't being able to work, you aren't able to function. And that's where you really, you want to consult a mental health provider at some point, just to,
this is 5 years. I mean, that's pretty,
yeah, 5 years. That
pretty,
would be,
that would really be
complicated grief.
Yeah, it would be, and depression. I mean, we're talking about something more.
Yeah, more depression. Yeah.
Grief is something that you can be grief, but you can have it, but you can have a good hour, a good day, where when you're really clinically depressed, when you're depressed every day, again, this looks to be way beyond normal. Not that we, you know, there is no such thing as normal, okay, in terms of a week, a month, a year. But 5 years of not doing anything based on the question, that seems like I'd call that way outside of the realm of any type of normality. One other thing, too, we're not talking just about death. It can be a relationship, can be even the death of a pet. I mean, you know, John has two cats and I have one. And boy, we lost Kahlua. That would be tough. This cat is really something. And John's kind of has these wild cats. You know, where did they come from?
That was a teacher I work with in Grand Ledge. Stacy Nye is her name. They were out in the barn in Portland, and she gave them to me.
I will tell you, one of them, I don't know what a bobcat looks like, but this, I mean, Mitch is a very big cat. But again, they're alive and well. But if you lose a pet that you love, it really can lead to really the grieving, because a lot of people, the pet is who they really have if someone is gone. Dogs more often than cats, but cats, obviously, if you get the right cat that thinks it's a dog, I mean, you're going to have that loving, warm person. You can have a loss of a cherished dream. Your goal was to do something, go somewhere, move. It can be a loved one's serious illness, someone you love that is very ill, a loss of a very important friendship, losing a job, losing financial stability. And I can tell you this, I think you would agree, John, there are a lot of people even since 2000, various times as the economy has run into these really tankings that have occurred, some catastrophic falls in the stock market, there have been a lot of people that have gone from thinking they were quite comfortable to really being in bad shape. We can even take those that a lot of General Motors stock. I mean, people really lost all this. So
became worthless.
Yeah. So depression and grief, we'll say grief, is not just in terms of death. We tend to think of it in that way, but people can be grieving the loss of a job, a friendship, you know, whatever it might be. But when something goes way beyond normality, then I think you're, you know, certainly that's where you'd have ministers involved. You've had mental health workers. And certainly medication can help. Medication is not going to solve grief because it's not really so much of a chemical type thing, but it can help somebody get through a difficult period. On the other hand, if you mask something with an antidepressant, you do run the risk of having it come back.
Not dealing with the issue.
In greater force. I will give you one personal thing, which I thought was kind of interesting. I didn't experience it, but I had a brother who died 2 years before I, a year, actually less than that, about 9-10 months before I was born. My mother said she had every day a nightmare that my son was in a cemetery. My brother, excuse me, was in a cemetery saying, I don't want to be here. And when I was born, the nightmares ended. I have the same name. And I remember a Dr. Bunnell, a class I was taking through Michigan State, there was they had an expert in that was saying, well, it must be horrible to you really never name a person the same name. I thought it was wonderful. My parents thought that I was a great guy, you know. Imagine living in a house where everybody was told God sent John.
You sound like a hero, Dad.
Yeah, well, I mean, sure, I can fly away. But again, but that was a horrible thing for my parents. My mother said it was the only time she ever saw my dad cry, you know, tough old Italian immigrant type guy. So when I came in there, in this case, it allowed them to get over the, maybe not the grieving of my brother, but it was one of those things that it made things right. And they were spiritual people and believed this was God's way of giving an answer. And, I never was one to challenge that interpretation. And my dad used to say, remember, John is God's gracious gift. And I certainly wasn't going to tell him, no, how does that sound? That would have been a very, very bad idea. And so everyone finds their own way to deal with these issues. You did when you lost 3 grandparents in a week. You did, and I was part of that when we all took part in that emotional thing with Coonrod. And so these are the kinds of things we all experience them. We all experience grieving, difficult situations. It's how we deal with it, and we look for an answer, and we try to find it. And everyone's is going to be different. It's not going to be the same for every person. So why don't we leave it here, and we will be back shortly for our final segment.
Live and Lansing, Jack Ebling is on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. This is Dr. John Braccio, Regional Psychological Services, with the younger Dr. John Braccio on the Ebling and You Show. Now, I want to know if you think Scott is a narcissist. I said, Scott, we should go till about 8 o'clock here. And he says, well, no, we can't. I said, well, why not? He said, because there's the Michigan State basketball game. I said, well, is that big of a thing? And John said, my son says, well, I'm leaving too. So I guess probably there'll be nobody left to listen. So no, he's not a narcissist. But that is a big thing, of course, going on here. While. Okay, I want to talk about a few things here. One of the things that always intrigues me, and we're psychologists and we talk about things, and let me just run a few of these things here. Try to realize these are not necessarily positions that I have one way or the other. It's just intriguing how Washington, the people that represent us, seem to be different than the most of the people in America. And I've talked to Jack about this, are the people really not that smart? Are they not that trustworthy? Do we need Harvard and Yale to lead, or what is it? But let me just give you some of the things here. Does a country, do the people have the right to determine who's going to come into the country, who's going to go out of it? I mean, one way, however you want to look at that, okay, what rights do the people have? And who are the people, I guess? I mean, we can say we have a representative government, but then again, how different are the groups that go? Okay, we talk about free speech. We have a senator who's talking about getting rid or concerned about 2 news outlets. My feeling is, hey, all the blogs, all the news, let's do it. We certainly don't want people that are running the government not to allow us to look at anything we want. There's the Dream Act, okay, which may be very reasonable, about giving citizenship to certain persons that are in the country. But that has nothing to do with the point is, after what happened in the last election, it is hard to believe that they wouldn't be working on jobs, and the economy as opposed to things that might not be the number one priority. So my issue is not the Dream Act. It's not the other issues that Republicans might have in Michigan right now other than the economy. But that certainly appears to be the issue. Then you have – my point I mentioned before was my concern earlier about a president from another country coming to the United States, complaining about the country, particularly what citizens might feel they need or want, and then to have an applause. That just seems to me like an inappropriate thing. I'd feel the same way if we went to another country and did that. So that's my general feeling. Again, you have now the United Nations. They're talking about capital punishment, Arizona law. So you have all of these things going on that seem to have a lot of support by elected officials, but it would appear that the people really have concerns about these things. And my question psychologically, the why, I didn't mention the scanners because I did hear that two-thirds of Americans are not opposed to these new techniques that are being used in airports. But anyway, John, how do you explain, regardless of your views, how you can have so many things that, quote, the people, whoever is maybe trying to herd cats, who the people have versus the people that supposedly represent them?
Well, and I think you mentioned the people. I think that they refer to the people in more in the abstract than in the reality. And I always think that there's a danger in thinking that you know too much, that you know what's best for others. And I really think this is that a lot of that is what has created the disconnect from the you know, the people who, you know, quote unquote, rule us from Washington and the people in the rest of the country. I just think that they kind of see, you know, the ignorant, unwashed masses out here and they know better. And it doesn't matter what anyone said, what anyone voted, that they're going to do their thing.
Well, and I think an interesting thing, it isn't that these are bad people.
I didn't mean to imply that.
No. Anytime you meet a legislature, like, you know, you can meet a Debbie Stabenow as an example, who's really a delightful person. If you just talk to her, she goes to all the meetings. I have nothing against her at all. And I don't even know how she's voting. My point is not picking on her. But if you meet any of these people, they seem like wonderful people. All of a sudden, you see votes that seem contrary to what most people really see. And so it becomes kind of that – it's just kind of a disconnect without knocking anyone. But it does seem kind of scary that you would have that kind of a situation. Now, I want to just move here to a few books. That's just kind of to leave a teaser out there, not knocking anybody, but a few books that I find fascinating. And I do remember we are currently a generation of talkers. And I'll tell you where I got that from. William Hazlitt back in the early 1800s was actually talking about the Victorian, excuse me, even before that, back in the Romantic period when he was actually going to talk about Samuel Taylor Coleridge for any of the historical people. But the point is we are a nation of talkers. And there are some good books to read. There's a fascinating book by Noah Feldman about scorpions. And what he's talking about are the four Supreme Court justices that Franklin Delano Roosevelt put on. Then these are people, Felix Frankfurter, Robert Jackson, Hugo Black, William O. Douglas, that came from poor backgrounds. They ended up, they were New Dealers that were
very
brought in.
Very humble origins, yeah.
And they all ended up fighting. And someone, whether it was Holmes or not, said it was like having a jar of scorpions together. It's a fascinating book. It goes into a lot of Roosevelt. It goes into a lot of the battles that were going on. And as a result, it's something worth reading. I think that Decision Points, the book by George Bush, is a good book to read, whether one likes George Bush or not. He talks about critical areas that he made decisions, including, I think it's fascinating, how when there was a 9/11 attack. I think that is another very interesting point. I have other books here, too. Those are just a few that I think are interesting to read, and if you get the chance, I would try to do it. Now, we've greatly enjoyed the opportunity to be here for Big Jack on his throne, golden throne, I think,
yes,
you said.
And big shoes to fill.
And we appreciate Tom Crawford of the Jack and Tom Show joining us. And I'll specifically mention, in this case, Nancy McCoy, who's married into the family of Josh in terms of sharing information. So look forward to seeing you at another time and talking, and go Green.
Yeah, go Spartans.